Good morning, everyone. According to T-Mobile time, it is 8 o'clock. I'd like to call this meeting to order. Let's begin with roll call.
Chair Perkins?
Here.
Vice Chair McAdoo?
Here.
Regent Carter?
Here.
Regent Carvalho?
Here.
Regent Levine? Regent Moran? You have a quorum.
Thank you. And this is our public comment section. This is for comments of anything that on or off the agenda, and it cannot be discussed at this time, but these items may be put on a future agenda. Is there any public comment?
No public comment.
Thank you. Brings us down to item number two, the minutes. If there are no comments, I would entertain a motion for acceptance.
So moved.
I'm sorry, who was that?
I'm sorry, this is Carvalho.
Oh, okay. There's so many faces moving on my screen. Thank you, Regent Carvalho. And do I hear a second?
Regent McAdoo will second.
Thank you, Regent McAdoo. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Chair Perkins, may I?
Sure, go ahead, Kat. Go ahead.
It really isn't in regard to that. I just wanted to make sure that Winter heard Patrick, Regent Carter, because I didn't hear him say he was present. I didn't know if he was on mute. I just wanted to make sure she knows he's present. I see his picture on the screen.
Thank you, Regent McAdoo.
Hopefully
I do
you can
see
hear
him.
Me.
I can hear you now. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you for that. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The minutes have been accepted. That brings us to item three, remarks from the chair. I have very few remarks except for just want to thank staff and the other members of my committee for handholding and walking me through this process and helping me make better decisions and to pull the agenda together in a decent order. And with that, I will move on to the item number four, the name of the Cultural Diversity Committee. If I may, if you'll indulge me, our name really doesn't reflect our charge. That's how I feel, and I'd love to hear the comments from the other members and possibly the comments from the Edict Committee and the presidents and just all the comments, because our name, I guess it's from the 70s. And it doesn't truly reflect what this committee is supposed to be about. So I would like to tee that up for Joy, is going to be doing a presentation.
Thank you, Chair Perkins, and good morning, Regents of the Cultural Diversity Committee and other guests. Thank you for having me this morning. As Chair Perkins said, the Cultural Diversity Committee name is not necessarily reflective of the current times of what other diversity, equity, and inclusion committees are calling themselves. I also want to preface some of this with the fact that the name will need to be reflective of the work and the direction also that the committee would want to go in. So I just took the liberty of doing a very preliminary and finite research on what other boards are calling their various committees that are similar to this. So I didn't look at universities or institutions in particular. I tried to keep it as board since we're talking about changing the name of a board committee. For example, the Association of Governing Boards has a similar committee called Justice, Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. Within that committee, they study campus climate, inclusion, and civility. There is also a trend in a couple of other systems having a committee called Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. So DEI seems to be a very neutral name or a very consistent name. The Arizona Board of Regents has a committee on free speech. The California State University Board of Trustees has a committee called Institutional Advancement, in which they cover campus climate, justice, diversity, equity, and inclusion. And then also I found that the UNC System Board of Governors has a committee called the UNC System Racial Equity Task Force. Something else that I found, not a lot of systems have a standing committee in which they address diversity, equity, and inclusion. Some systems have this committee as a task force,
or a committee that meets as needed, but it's not necessarily a standing committee that meets quarterly along with their other committees. I would implore and suggest that we take further time to work with our experts on the on EDIC, which is our Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion Council, to kind of unpack and flesh out what is happening nationally, what's happening with their colleagues in other states, and why it would be good to look further into changing the name, but also changing the scope of work that the CDC addresses.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. If you don't, any questions from the board members or actually anybody in the presidents, the anybody from EDICT?
Joy, this is Lisa. I have a question, if you don't mind.
Go ahead, Lisa.
Yes, of course. I'm sorry.
Joy, are there any studies to show just all these different committees that other institutions have or other systems have in other states, how they are more effective? It seems like diversity and inclusion within ENCHI could do more to be effective, right? That our committee could have more action items that are actionable rather than just information only. Can you touch on that a little bit?
Sure, I'll hit on it a little bit, and then I'm also going to defer to either Dr. Barbie Oakes or Dr. Eloisa Gordon-Mora, who serve as the chair and co-chair of EDIC for this term. So Regent Levine, I didn't come across any studies when I did some preliminary research, strictly just looking for any names, but I'm sure there are briefings out there on the work of these committees that kind of show their effectiveness or how addressing some of these standards within their systems for their various institutions. I also will say, again, in the beginning, as I pointed out, the name is also a projection of the work. So if we want to change the scope of work that the CDC addresses, I would suggest that then we may want to look at changing the name to make it reflective of what we want to accomplish. And then I'll also reach out to Dr. Oakes and Dr. Gordon-Mora to hit on that as well, being experts within this field.
Yes, good morning. This is Eloisa Gordon-Mora. I absolutely echo what Joy Holliday has pointed out. In the work of diversity, equity, inclusion, as Regent Perkins has indicated, there has been a historical evolution. Back in the 70s, as she points out, the work began in area studies, Black studies, women's studies, et cetera. And at that time, multicultural studies, cultural areas was usually the term used for the work. That has evolved throughout the years into diversity and inclusion, diversity, equity, and inclusion. And now most recently, more best practice institutions incorporate the term social justice, racial and social justice to also include group areas beyond racial ethnic categories. But as Joyce indicated, that's usually part of strategic work, which is so key in the work of diversity, equity, inclusion, that establishes an assessment of where the institutions are, where the systems are. And usually the name change is a reflection of the need to advance the work, as Regent Perkins is suggesting, but also a commitment and an action plan, as I will also be sharing some thoughts in my other participation. So many institutions in their evolution of diversity, equity, and inclusion, and as part of their strategic planning around it, have changed names. But what I'm trying to emphasize is that that name change is the result of that focused assessment work.
Thank you. I appreciate that input. Any other comments?
Sure. This is Barbie Oakes, Chief Diversity Officer at UNLV for the record. Good morning, Chair Perkins, Co-Chair, Vice Chair McAdoo, and Chair of EDIC, Eloisa Gordon-Mara, my esteemed colleague at UNR. We talked about this, but the issue is really larger than just coming up with a name. In some ways, I mean, like some of you know that we're grappling with this issue around the mascot and the identity of UNLV. So it's important to look at a name as being reflective of both who you are and, I believe, of your aspirational goal, who you want to be. some of the challenge, though, with doing with where we are with the CDC committee is that I'm not sure everyone even understands the difference between all these words: diversity, equality, equity, social justice, engagement, inclusion, and all of that. So I think that that is a reasonable place to start, and just really looking at what is the foundational differences in the meaning of these words. And then the other point, and we could get into that now, I'm not sure if we have time to really talk about some of those differences, even to give like a little thumbnail sketch of the differences in those words. But I think one of the bigger issues that the EDIC members have been facing is that it's great to change our name to be more aspirational and reflective of the work we want to do. But if we don't have any infrastructure to achieve that, it just puts diversity officers who are already challenging to keep up with the scope of work in a position of failing to meet even more people's expectations. And some, you know, you, any of you who have worked in higher ed know how difficult it is to manage people's expectations in any way. So I think we have to try to find that sweet spot between, you know, releasing the image that we started from and then deciding where we go from here. As I listened to the meetings all day yesterday, literally, and heard some of the very rich conversations about the work that's being done around issues of diversity, equity, inclusion, social justice, it's really exciting to hear that this work is happening at all of our institutions. But it's also what's happening in the K-12 system is affecting us and our ability to prepare all of our students for the world of work. All of these issues are really grounded in it. So I think one of the things that our committee talked about when we met earlier this week in discussing this issue is that maybe we need to have time at if there's a board retreat or another meeting when we have a more substantial conversation about our level of commitment to the work, so that we can honestly, you know, the leaders, the presidents, as well as the regents, when you task the members of EDIC and task the members of your institution to do the work, you have a better understanding of what it actually takes to achieve that work, to actualize these goals. But we need to do it. Diversity, equity, inclusion, that's at the foundation of half the conversations that happen in this country right now. But it takes a lot of work to move from the equality model that, you know, that most institutions started on when they were looking at most of the students, most of the faculty and staff are the same, so let's treat them the same. The whole world of affirmative action work was born out of that very reality, that it's time to move from this homogeneity model and reflect the diversity that's in the world. And so that's where the work of diversity was actually even grounded. And for many years, we did that work through affirmative action, but then we all began to see that and understand that quotas and all of that didn't work. So now we tried to move to more of an equity model where we acknowledge the diversity of the needs of the people in our community, and then we began to provide programming and other resources and recruitment and success initiatives to attract and support them. And, you know, half of the goals in our region system are really designed to foster equity. That's really tough work, and it creates a lot of tension because in an economy that's already resource constrained, you know, it just is putting even more of a demand on it. So diversity officers, Eloisa, Yvonne, I see my colleagues on here, we're not in a position to make those decisions ourselves. We have to really rethink about how we engage people like us in these conversations so that you can hear our voices. And I would argue that we are some of the people who are most on the ground in terms of being aware of what the needs are of people who are most on the margins. You can't always hear that in your places. So thinking about how you get us to the table, knowing that we're not there to be antagonistic, but to really help just make sure that everyone remembers all of the people that we serve, so that when we're designing our resource allocation and designing these programs, we can, to the best of our ability, consider all of the people that are involved. That's a lot of conversation to have, you know, when we're talking about what's in the name. But when we start talking about moving from just cultural diversity committee to diversity, equity, inclusion, let's not even get to social justice, because an equity model is really looking at how do we foster a sense of engagement, belonging, and community. Social justice is the final frontier, because you're really out there looking at the world of activism. So those were just some of the thoughts we felt. We didn't have any answers. We felt that, like, at our upcoming retreat in January, if the committee charges us, that we wanted to really spend some time talking about this. And then maybe the next time in June, when our board, when we have another CDC meeting, we might be able to come back to the table and have a little bit more research to share with you all. And we'll have had an opportunity to reach out to you, the board, the regent members, as well as the presidents, to get some insight into where we go from here and how we can realistically do it.
Thank you, Dr. Oakes. That is a mountain. And right now we're just trying to get the direction, the sign that says this is the off ramp. But yeah, thank you for all that input. And that is a tall order. Regent McAdoo.
Yes, thank you, Chair Perkins. So, I mean, you gave several very poignant comments, and I appreciate those, everyone that has spoken. One of the things that you said at the beginning, Dr. Oakes, was all the definitions for the word diversity, equity, inclusion, social justice, racism, all those words. And I just wondered if any of you working in this on the campuses, or all of you, have what I term a white paper, a paper or an electronic version that you could send us as to what, in your expertise, those words mean. Because I would think every single person on this call would most likely have some similar but also very different definitions of those words. And I feel like we need to work from those core definitions that have been defined by who I would call experts in the field, and I don't classify myself as one of those, but I certainly am seeking to be one of those and learn more about it every single day, and I have that opportunity. So I would just like to get something before me that I can literally begin to wrap my mind around with correct definitions. Thank you.
I would be happy to provide that, Vice Chair McAdoo, because in our Management Training Academy at UNLV for all managers, I actually changed the focus of my workshop last year, and we did exercises that was completely built around the definitions of all of these terms, because it's important that we have people at our institutions that all are working from a similar understanding and who truly understand, like, why it is significant to know these various words. I am happy to share that information with you all. And maybe at some point, you know, should the board decide to do so, we could even have a 1 hour conversation and sort of like workshop around all of those terms. The workshop received very high reviews because, like you, there's this assumption that people understand all these differences, and most of the time they don't. So I feel like it's been one of my personal responsibilities to try however possible to help increase your level of knowledge so that you can be more sophisticated when you're dealing with these issues, because they are very nuanced differences, you know, with this word. And some people are in a place mentally where if you say the wrong word, you're just X'd off the page. And the word, the appropriate word, changes every year. So if you're not close to the work, how can you possibly know that? And so we have to get into more of a, I think of it like a teachable moment model, and education model. So yes, I'm happy to work with Chair Perkins and you to figure out the best way to get that information. But yeah, I have a glossary already of, you know, like 28 terms and a worksheet that we've done with that very workshop.
If you were just, I would say if you would send the glossary to the committee, at least that would be helpful, because honestly, these words also have or can have be very emotionally charged words. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to steer really clear of that and be speaking the same language.
This is Joy Holly. I'm sorry. I just want to chime in and say that we can also work with the other members of EDIC to kind of get this codified report that can be a standing document that we share with all of our regents. So I can definitely take that back to the committee and we could discuss that as well.
And I'd like to hear from Regent Levine and from Chancellor Rose.
I'm sorry, Regent Perkins, what did you say?
I understand. I'd like to hear from Regent Levine and then from Chancellor Rose.
Oh, I don't think I'm in the queue, but I just want to say thank you very much for the presentations. I'm very hopeful that this body can become more actionable when it comes to more diversity and inclusion issues. I think that's so important for our students, our faculty. Anything I can do, even once I'm off the board, I'd really like to help with that, because I've seen over the course of the 6 months that I've been privy to be on this board, so much opportunity to bring words into action. And I think that's so important right now more than ever before. So thank you, Joy, and Dr. Oakes, and everyone else who's involved in this. Thank you very much for the work you're doing.
And Chancellor Rose?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and Vice Chair McAdoo. For the record, Melody Rose, Chancellor. I just wanted to raise up some of the conversation that Chair Perkins and I have been having in recent weeks about this concept of how best to leverage all of the wisdom that is in this committee and in EDIC and in the membership that I see on the screen right now. I do think that this is an incredible moment to move this agenda forward. I will say I was thrilled to arrive in Nevada for several reasons. And one, of course, is that the population of our state looks like the future of America. And that puts us in an incredibly envious position to raise up that richness of our diversity, to problem solve around achievement gaps and access issues, and really become a model for other systems across the country if we get it right. And so I just wanted to share that that is one of the primary reasons I was excited about this opportunity. And I am all on board with working with Chairwoman Perkins and Vice Chair McAdoo to create a work plan for this committee that can create some commitments and therefore accountability around the work. And the presidents who are here this morning and I also took up this conversation in our full president's retreat a few weeks ago. And I think I can say on our collective behalf that we have buy-in around this agenda. We know that there is a lot of work ahead. And I think that starting with the definitions is foundational. We have to make sure that we are all speaking the same language. And then I would be happy to talk about the kinds of things that we could do to bring forward action items for this committee and make sure that we have vital board input and oversight on this agenda. So just wanted to say thank you for all that you're doing, and I really look forward to moving this into action in the new year.
Thank you for that, Chancellor Rose. And Regent Carter.
Yeah, so I think, you know, equity is very important to probably add to our title. And I'll just give you an example. A few weeks ago, I was at a CTE conference in the state of Nevada, and they were really giving the higher education system a hard time because depending on where you live, you could take the same CTE program, and it might be three or four classes up north and three classes at CSN and two classes somewhere else. And they were really giving us a hard time and not understanding why that is the case. So I think, you know, equity. equity should also be a very important charge of this committee, and also that would fall over to our seven community colleges, but I think we could lead that charge to kind of fix some of those things.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Does that give enough direction for, I think, to recap, to start off with the definitions and then come back at a later date, probably around January? So does that give enough direction on how, what we want to do and how we want to change the name?
Okay.
Because I don't want to be like yesterday. I don't want us to run 45 minutes over. So thank you for all that input. And with that, if there's no more comments, I'll move on to item number five, Dr. Gordon Mora.
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to share with you. Actually, so much of what I'm sharing today, that's why I waited for this turn, not to consume the time, has to do very much with the theme of the names, the definitions, the issue of equity that Regent Carter brings, as I will discuss today. It's actually a new standard of the Northwest Commission of Colleges and Universities. And one suggestion I will have at the work we can do in EDIC is to contextualize our definitions from the Northwest Commission's definitions, because those are overall accrediting organism. And as my more than esteemed colleague, Dr. Oaks, points out, part of the challenges of diversity, equity, inclusion is that those terms, even by themselves, are not clearly understood by not only any random person, but even by our community members. So the commitment of the name has to reflect a clear understanding and commitment to those definitions. So for the sake of time, I prepared something that I'll read, and I want to leave some time at the end for questions. So again, good morning. I want to thank the Board of Regents, the Cultural Diversity Committee, its members, and Chair Perkins for the opportunity to present today. I also want to greet and say hello to the university presidents, including my president, President Sandoval here, and my esteemed and chief colleagues. I'm Dr. Eloisa Gordon Mora. I'm UNR's Diversity and Inclusion Officer, as well as this year's EDIC Chair, along with my co-chair, as we mentioned, Dr. Barbie Oaks, Chief Diversity Officer at UNLV. I'm also with Dr. Tony Cinta of Nevada State College, one of two Nevada-wide participants of the Equity Council of the Northwest Commission of Colleges and Universities, our NSHE institution's accreditation organism. I bring this point, as I just mentioned, because equity is a new standard, and we, the institutions, will be measured on it. And equity is part of the Northwest Commission's 2020 accreditation standards. So that means that we, NSHE institutions, need to position ourselves to demonstrate not simply diversity, which is essentially about demographics, but inclusion, which is about belonging. It is about cultural norms inside the organization that make different groups welcome and valued, and equity, which is almost the last frontier. Equity is beyond equality, is a measure of fairness. As Dr. Oaks points out, beyond equality, beyond legal standards, equity assesses how fair are the procedures, how fair are the regulations coming from the diversity of experience. And a common example for that would be how usually standardized tests that students take are not equitable, because not all students come to the discussion or exam table, let's say, with the same amount of educational resources and supports. That interpretation and analysis of what is equity is precisely what we are doing at the Equity Council at the Northwest Commissions of Colleges and University. And I'm kind of surprised it's still not a very known fact, given that the equity standard is a new one, but there we sit, Nevada State College and UNR, representing all our NSHE institutions, alongside presidents, provosts, CDOs, Chief Diversity Officers of the whole Northwest region, including Oregon State, Chancellor's Rose Former Institution, Montana State, University of Utah, University of Idaho, and others. Today, I wanted to share some observations on faculty demographics using some of the findings resulting from the process we began last year at UNR of extensive and intensive university-wide strategic planning on diversity, equity, precisely, and inclusion, connecting all areas. This work has organized diversity task forces for all the academic units, meaning all the colleges and schools, all the areas in student services, communications and IT, police, we're working with them just now. And we will end with human resources, administration and finance, and research and innovation. At the end of the academic year, we will conclude a diversity, equity, and inclusion strategic plan, which will be the first for UNR and a standard of best practices in other institutions, including our peers. Unlike what has been done in the past, we have organized and planned on diversity in all areas. Part of the challenges of diversity, equity, inclusion is that we tend to think, oh, that belongs to that discipline. Oh, that's not in my area. No, it belongs to all of us because those values are inscribed in our mission statements. So therefore, we need to demonstrate how from the different areas we're committed to them. In terms of faculty demographics, which essentially refers to diversity, in the documentation work, we have also been connecting diversity and inclusion and belonging, and for that using the Institutional Climate Survey findings, completed last year. This is necessary because demographics, just numbers at any given time, are not necessarily synonymous with well-being and therefore equity, inclusion, and such important measurements as retention, belonging, promotion, tenure, et cetera. Even further, rather than working with aggregated data the way it is traditionally done, we, meaning the office and our partners in the colleges, and this has taken a very long time, so why it's not done all the time, not only have disaggregated the information for each academic unit, but also correlated the information with other categories. That is, we're not looking, let's say, at race, ethnicity only in faculty, but race, ethnicity, and gender, for example. From this, we have been demonstrated that rather than a single gender finding of faculty demographics, we tend to think this group has to be focused more than others. No. What we have documented is that there's variation among colleges and disciplines, including in terms of faculty in areas of retention, promotion, and tenure. Not only that, but we have correlated also faculty groups by racial ethnic categories in proportion and in relation to the corresponding racial ethnic student groups. What we have found is not only the expected overall underrepresentation of non-white faculty with respect to the total numbers of student of colors that we know is increasing overall at UNR over 40%, but that faculty of color themselves are in disproportions with respect to students, meaning that, for example, Latinx faculty is the least proportionally balanced of all faculty groups in terms of Latinx students, the counterpart. Another way of saying this is that a Latinx student has the least possibility of connecting with Latinx faculty in terms of other faculty of color and their connection or proportional representation in terms of students. Some faculty categories like Indigenous, Native Hawaiian, Pacific Island are somewhat in proportion, and I say that with air quotes, with those students category, but just because of the abysmally low student demographics for those groups, around 1% for each. Besides race, ethnicity in faculty demographics, gender continues to be critically important. In some schools and disciplines, both female faculty and female students, rates continue being considerably low, even before the institution's average. And again, why we cannot use aggregated data, but we have to contextualize by schools. Those low numbers sustain the vicious cycle of low female presence in traditionally male mostly science and business disciplines, and important, among other things, because those are also the higher paying disciplines, and how those lacks of possible mentoring female figures further discourage female students from enrolling and or graduating. And again, we have the evidence coming from climate survey findings pointed to that, as well as other forms of more local college-specific studies. In closing, I would like to underline the fact that as a reflection of the Northwest Commission's concern with ongoing lack of performance gaps and rates of success for minoritized students, whether racial, ethnic, gender, but also first generation, rural abilities, areas of students, and other, a new equity standard that I've been mentioned was introduced in their 2020 accreditation standards. For the commission, that represents the need for institutions to commit clearly to a number of items. First, institutions will need to demonstrate better how the university's mission and values on diversity, equity, and inclusion, and if we don't even understand the terms clearly, that's most certainly a starting point, how those values are actually sustained by the existing data and demonstrated more substantially by the existing evidence and practice. Importantly, this means consistent use of disaggregated data, that is evidence, as opposed to purely aspirational standards to inform decisions, including overall planning and budgets, and therefore why HR, administration, and finance are areas of diversity, equity, and inclusion. It's where the decisions are being made. Because equity also entails transparency, the new standard could also mean making faculty and student information more accessible to the public. Not only enrollment and hiring, but such principal faculty measures of inclusion as retention, promotion, tenure by demographical breakdowns, meaning by race, ethnicity, gender, and so forth. If a strong data,
I'm Dr. Gordon Moore. We're running a little bit behind. So all the information that you've given, and I do want to leave time for discussion if there's any questions or comments.
Yeah, my last comment is that we need to, therefore, when committing to equity, start looking into accountability measurements. And that would be my conclusion. So yes, questions.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Are there any questions or comments?
Chair Perkins, this is Lisa. Can I ask a question, please?
Sure. Go ahead, Regent Levine.
Thank you. You mentioned climate surveys earlier, and I was wondering, I know that some have talked about a statewide climate survey and that how that could be really important to showing more data collection on all of the things that both of you have talked about today. Is that something that this body could house or the committee could house? Can you elaborate on that? Because I know that's something, and I see Chancellor Rose is on too. If you could talk about that, that's something I've been trying to figure out is where that could go. Dr. Oakes or is it Dr. Gordon? I apologize. Your last name isn't showing on my screen.
Yes, Dr. Gordon Moore. No problem. Who is the question for?
Chair Perkins, would you like me to chime in?
Thank you, Chancellor Rose. Go ahead.
Of course. Chair Perkins, Vice Chair McAdoo, to you and through Regent Levine. Thank you very much for the question. Actually, I shared yesterday in the board meeting that we started my tenure here in September with a climate survey inside ENSHE. So we, in my very first month on the job, we implemented a survey instrument to ask ENSHE, system admin, SES, and board staff, tell us about how they're feeling about the organization. And so I have those results and we're working on them internally. And that for me was so important for the reasons you suggest, that we really, you know, can't just be guessing about how things are for our communities. We have to ask, and then we have to act on what we learn. So on the system admin side, we're already well underway, and I'll be reporting those results out to my team next week. And so with respect to moving that out to the campuses, I do happen to know that there were a couple of campuses within the last 5 years who have conducted their own local climate surveys. So I think at least one or two of them is fairly recent within the last year or two. So I want to be careful that we don't duplicate efforts. And I think the appropriate next step is for the presidents and I to get a conversation and get our arms around what do we already have at our disposal? What can we already glean from recent surveys? But I do agree with you, Regent Levine, that having the data system-wide and having it consistent across the system is the most useful way to go. The challenge we will have there, of course, is that survey implementation, you know, around for over 100,000 individuals is very complex and very expensive. And I think, again, to one of the points we heard earlier, we have to be realistic about what we commit ourselves to and resource it properly. Because the last thing I want to do is to make a commitment around a climate survey that we never implement. Because I think we will, in that scenario, we will have done more harm than good. And so I'd like to take this as a stepwise conversation, have the discussion with my president colleagues about what they already know around climate on their campuses, and share that information back through Chair Perkins so that we can then have a conversation about what makes sense and do it in a really planful manner. So totally agree with you that it is the right thing to do. I just want to make sure that we're able to, and properly resourced to do it adequately.
Chancellor Rose, I appreciate everything.
Hold on. Wait. Dr. Nauman, and then Dr. Gordon Mora. Your hands went up, so let's start with that.
Thank you, Regent Perkins. This is Laura Nauman for the record, Faculty Senate Chair at Nevada State College. I just wanted to thank Dr. Gordon Mora for her review. And again, I might be unknowledgeable about some of the distinctions of what the Cultural Diversity Committee versus EDIC do, but you know, I at my own institution, I'm sitting on a committee which we title Attracting and Engaging, kind of instead of a recruitment and retention of faculty, we want to attract them and then engage them so they stay on our campus. And you know, we continue to tackle these issues about how to, again, recruit and retain faculty of all types. And I often wonder, you know, what I know that we are doing some really great things on our campus, and I often want to know what my colleagues at other institutions are doing. And I don't know if there has been a collection of practices and procedures and policies that are used across the system and at each institution, because again, I think that would be helpful, that we don't have to feel like we have to reinvent the wheel. And if there are things that are going well, how can we kind of scale up? You know, we've talked about lots of really lofty ideas that I think might be beyond Nevada State's current capacities. You know, we've talked about things like opportunity hires and using things like search advocates, but we're a very small faculty. So to scale something up like that might be difficult, but if there are things that were happening system-wide that, again, shared resources and efficiencies could certainly be very useful and helpful. I also do like the idea of examining climate surveys. I know our institution has done them. It's imperative that we also disaggregate the data. I know it gets tricky as you start doing that. It becomes hard because your sample sizes become much smaller. But I definitely think this is an area where we, again, possibly a topic or several sessions at a next diversity summit, where we could come together and talk about things that are working. I know, you know, for me, in my own department, we've been very successful. Of seven faculty, five in psychology in my area are diverse backgrounds, four Latinas and one Asian American woman and two white women in psychology. So we take very seriously our attraction and how we recruit. We really try to help candidates who are going to interview with us feel prepared. We talk about transparent assignment design with students. We should be doing that with our candidates as well, so that they feel like they can come in and shine when they interview with us. So I would love to continue this discussion, and I'm happy to hear that this is such an important element of what our system is working on. So thank you.
And let's go to Regent Levine. She has a few additional questions.
Thank you, Chair Perkins. I just wanted to add, and I know Dr. Gordon and Dr. Oakes, I had asked that question to you earlier, so I do want to give you an opportunity to address that on the statewide climate survey. But it's really important that when we talk about diversity, inclusion, equity, that it's not just words. And I always say this, budgets are a way to show priority. And so when we hear that something is expensive to do or it's too expensive to do, we always have to remember that we are investing in our future. We are investing in the safety of our students, of our faculty, of our staff, and we are investing in the future of Nevada's system of higher education, which is one of the most diverse in the country. And so again, you know, I really hope that this is a place that a statewide climate survey can be housed, because that data collection in standardized form is a tool that every president and every campus within the NG system should have, and that should be from the system. Thank you.
Thank you, Regent Levine. Dr. Gordon Moore.
Yes, thank you. Just kind of picking on different comments. Following, to begin with, what Chancellor Rose is pointing to, data, and following away to Regent Levine, data is fundamentally important because it's a source of evidence. But however, data is just that matter if we don't act upon it. And part of acting upon it is what Regent Levine is suggesting, that our planning, our budget allocation, our organizational practices have to reflect those values of diversity, equity, and inclusion. That's one thing. Data is importantly also assessed beyond numbers with climate surveys, and why those are important. At UNR, our institution-wide climate survey was completed just when I arrived, so I had, among other things, besides the swastikas and all the things that people don't realize we have to do. Our office coordinated the efforts of interpreting that data. And one caveat I want to point out, data means nothing if we don't act upon it. And that climate survey had more than 500 pages of evidence that we needed to move the institution to really act upon. One. Secondly, a climate survey is always a measure of a time and a moment. So therefore, no matter how expensive, time-consuming a climate survey is, you have to continually assess. So therefore, we have to come up institution-wide, at the institutional level, but at the system level, more cost-effective mechanisms of assessing what we're doing on diversity, equity, and inclusion. As President Sandoval knows, we have been, and we're moving into that direction of having something called a diversity equity dashboard that would be a low cost, but a source of, at least at the, each institutional level, some periodic assessment that tracks, okay, where we are on gender, on race, and importantly, covering not simply student populations, but faculty, but staff. Because well-being, belonging, if we are concerned about students, if we're not concerned about the well-being and belonging of faculty and staff, we're really not supporting students, because students are greatly impacted by those.
Thank you. That seems like a whole nother agenda topic right there, and that we probably could talk about that for about another 30 or 40 minutes. But I have been given the hook. So we're moving without any, if there aren't any further questions or comments, I would like to move forward. Okay, let's go to the Southern Nevada Diversity Summit, item number 6. And Aisha Kidd, Associate Vice President, is going to do the presentation from CSN. And assume that we've all read, gone through the slides, okay, and gone through the deck, and if you could just hit the highlights, I would greatly appreciate it.
Excellent. Thank you, Chair Perkins. I appreciate that, and Vice Chair McAdoo, the entire board, and my presidents, President Zaragoza, Edict, the other presidents, and Chancellor Rose, for allowing me to present on the Diversity Summit. I am in plan. My plan is to hit the highlights because of time. So I'll go ahead and go to the next slide. And so some of our highlights are that it was extremely well attended, and that is pretty much due, I think, to the virtual platform. We had to switch to virtual, of course, when the pandemic hit. And we did, in my opinion, we did a very excellent job in switching and the committee planning to move to a virtual event. We remained under budget, again, because it was virtual. And so we cut costs. You know, we didn't have cost on food or location or swag or any of those things, travel for speakers. So we cut a lot of costs that way. And I'll go over the budget a little bit more in a minute. Sponsorship allowed us to also stay under budget. And so that allowed for less financial commitment from the institutions. And because it was virtual, all 8 institutions were able to participate. And that is something that usually doesn't happen as well. And the committee was super engaged and very supportive, and I appreciate that from them. We could continue ahead. And so the committee was made up of the 4 Southern organizations. And then we also added UNR, membership from UNR, to bring in the North, and because they had to cancel their summit in April. And we were supported and guided by Edict and, of course, the CSN committee. Next slide. So we used MS Teams as what was required of us through CSN, and that allowed us to have that larger attendance, but it did cause us some challenges, and that was one of our learning opportunities. That I would definitely have chosen a different platform, because MS Teams is really works well within an institution, but the moment you start inviting people from outside of your institution with different email addresses, then it becomes challenging for that person to get in. They have to jump through a few more hoops. And so our recommendation to NSC, who is up next for the summit, is that a different platform be used virtually. But we were able to train all the committee speakers, all the committee members, the speakers, and once we got through the initial morning hiccup, we really didn't have any problems after that. We figured it out fairly quickly that morning, and were able to transition well. My team did really well in going, Aisha, we need to do something else. And so we sent out the links, and that worked really well. Next slide. The agenda, we had 4 featured speakers: Ben Jealous, former NAACP president; Dr. Sarah Goldrick-Rabb, professor at Temple University and founder of the Hope Center; and then a mother-daughter duo from up north, Tiffany Young and Caprice Young. Tiffany's the director of equity and diversity at Washoe County School District, and Caprice actually works at UNR in student engagement. And so they were all well attended and all had very positive feedback about their presentations. We also had an Equality for All Forum, 12 simultaneous workshops, 6 in the morning, 6 in the afternoon, the president's panel, and the chancellor's address. So we were able to get Chancellor Rose, as a new chancellor, to join us on that event. That was excellent. Next slide. And so we had a variety of topics. I won't go into it, but we covered everything. So the current topics of the day, racial equity was definitely some of the larger topics that we had with the keynotes, with the featured speakers, and then all of these other topics. Next slide. So some of the registration statistics, we had 1,125 people register unique emails. This is where they came from, the institutions that they said they were affiliated with, majority coming from CSN as the host, that makes sense. And then the next largest numbers coming from UNR and UNLV. But throughout the system, we had presence and attendance. Next slide. So again, more registration stats. Employee type, the largest number of employees participating were administrative faculty. And so if a learning opportunity, I'd want to do something more to reach out to more academic faculty, and certainly to students. We didn't have as many students as participate as we'd like to see participate. Next slide. And so here we had the majority of people were also in management that participated. So at the dean, director level, you've got about 160 something people. And then if you look down a little bit, there was 253 at the mid-management level. And then the largest number from non-management would have been the non-supervisory group of 266. There's a large group in other, but we're not familiar with who they are. The other didn't then ask them to explain. Next slide. And again, we only had 100 students. We'd really like to have seen more students. We had the largest group of first attendees. So over 600 people was their first time attending the summit. Again, I think the virtual opportunity allowed for that to happen. Next slide. The race and ethnicity, the largest group was our Caucasian group, and then the next largest was the Latinx and African American, but by a significant difference. And so we really feel like we need to do a little bit more to really get out there and market to different groups to see a larger participation in that diversity. Next slide. The largest group was females by an overwhelming amount. 74% was females. Again, an opportunity to reach out to our male counterparts to participate in the summit. Next slide. The degrees were there. You know, most it's an educational institution, so that's not surprising. Next slide. And the age groups, we hit the mid-range there from 26 to 55, where we see the largest numbers there in participation, and then going into up to 65. So a nice range of age. Next slide. Very few veterans participated. Again, another opportunity, I think, for us. Next slide. And then, so overall attendance. So of the unique emails, once everyone had shown up, was 930. And all sessions, of course, this includes the duplicates of people going to multiple sessions, was over 20, was almost 2,600. The most well-attended was Ben Jealous in the morning. So starting out, I think any conference, you have the most attendance in the morning, and then it starts to taper off towards the afternoon. Our largest morning attendance for an individual session was about mental health. Our largest afternoon attendance was about the African-American student population. Next slide. The budget. So I'm thrilled about the budget because we came in under budget. Since this presentation was sent to the board, we have more updated numbers, and the numbers became 19,857.16 was our total for all expenditures. We had 15,000 sponsorship from MGM and Complete College America that paid for the majority of our speakers. So that left us with only $4,800 to spread throughout the four institutions that participated in the summit and in hosting the summit. And so a great success when it comes to the budget. We had originally started when we thought we would have a live event at somewhere around $51,000. And so we came in at 19, and with the sponsorship, the institutions only spent $4,800. Next slide. Our evaluation results were very positive, overwhelmingly positive. The majority of those that responded, we had only 240 respondents, but the majority of those were in the, you know, above 75% of somewhat satisfied or extremely satisfied. And so with the presenters, they were 95% satisfied. With the content, 90%. So we had very good feedback in that way. Next slide. And I just gave you some of the comments. Here are some of the critical ones. They were about the technology for the most part. And again, we solved that problem, I think, within the first 15 minutes. And so that allowed people to get in and really get in to see Ben's presentation. Next slide. And then the next slide is just positive comments. Some of the things that they enjoyed were the speakers, Dr. Goldrick Rabb, the Youngs, and that the information was current and appropriate. Next slide. And then our learning opportunities. So I've already mentioned a few, definitely using a different virtual platform. And then, you know, getting sponsorship earlier to maybe even cover all of that cost. And then just the different groups that we should reach out to see more and higher participation from there. The virtual opportunity allows, you know, all of NCHI to participate and even to spend more time reaching outside of the state to get others to participate as well with a virtual event. So, but overall, the committee did an excellent job. I really want to say thank you to all of the committee members. Thank you to Colton Jones in particular from CSN, because he really led the effort in keeping the committee on task and making sure we hit all of our benchmark points to be prepared for October. And I want to just thank the committee for allowing us to present today. So I'll take any questions.
Thank you very much. Oh, sorry, that was a big echo. There we go. Thank you very much for that hitting the highlights. I really appreciate that. if there's any Chair comments Perkins? From the committee.
Chair Perkins?
Yes.
This is Regent Geddes. I'm not on the committee, but I will have to say that presentation by Tiffany and Caprice Young was one of the best presentations I have ever seen. And once it was uploaded, I've shared that with friends, family, colleagues. If you haven't seen it, you should go to that. You should go to the link and watch it because they just did a fantastic job.
Right. Thank you for mentioning that. I did forget to mention that all of the sessions are on the website, on CSN's website under our Diversity Summit 2020 page. You can go back and watch all of the sessions.
Thank you. Can you get that information to like all of us, just the links?
I can't. It's in the PowerPoint. So if you have the PowerPoint, it's the slides after that. Just the closing out slides. But I can send that out as well.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Any other questions or comments? I did attend the summit myself. I thought it was fantastic. Yes, absolutely. Do not use MS Teams again, ever. I don't know if you realized it, but when you navigate away from MS Teams, it shuts it down completely so you can't hear. And like if you're working dual screens, like I typically do, it cuts you off and you can't hear the presentation and you can't keep working. So that's just my personal, input. And I saw somebody's hand go up. Was it Dr. Gordon or was that?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Yes, just wanted to point out that as Aisha mentioned, since we very unfortunately had to cancel our Northern Nevada Diversity Summit, the committee did reach out to us, the Office of Diversity and Inclusion, to identify some of the presenters that would have presented at our summit to be included in the Southern Nevada. And most certainly, as Regent Geddes points out, one of our top picks, because we made a selection for the Southern Summit, was the presentation of Caprice and Tiffany Young that became one of the keynote speakers. So I just wanted to point out that we also want to continue that model of mutual support, North and South.
Okay, and for those of us joining us for the next Health Sciences Committee, I apologize, we are running a little bit over. If there are no more comments about the Southern Nevada Diversity Summit. Thank you, and great job. Really appreciated it, and it was a really good summit, and you guys put in more than a day's labor to pull that off, so kudos. Next, I think we're going to go to Z for the number 7 Executive Order 13950 on race, sex, and stereotyping or scapegoating. And Z, you have 3 minutes.
That's okay. I've been rushed before, so I'll be very brief here. Thank you, Chair Perkins, Vice Chair McAdoo. Good morning, members of the Cultural Diversity Committee, Chancellor Rose, presidents, students, faculty, and staff, and anyone else tuning in here. For the record, Zalalam Bogala, Deputy General Counsel for System Administration at ENSHE. So in September, President Trump issued Executive Order 13950 entitled Executive Order on Combating Race and Sex Stereotyping, which prohibits all workplace trainings from engaging in, quote, race or sex stereotyping or scapegoating. The executive order applies to federal government employees, federal contractors, and federal grantees. For federal contractors, violating the executive order could lead to cancellation of a contract or be deemed ineligible for future contracts. For federal grantees, violating the executive order could lead to the withholding or cancellation of federal grant dollars or programs. The executive order is theoretically applicable to ENSHE as a federal contractor and a federal grantee, but the obligations we have, if any, don't trigger unless certain circumstances are met. This item is for information only. I just wanted to bring it to the committee to inform you that ENSHE has been monitoring this since September. And in fact, the chancellor issued a statement last month, kind of rejecting its premise and its thrust. And I just want to quote a little bit from her statement. She said, "NSHE does not tolerate discrimination or harassment based on sex, race, or any other protected category. But it's not enough to have policies in place that reflect this value. We must live this value by demonstrating every commitment to train faculty, staff, and students on diversity, equity, and inclusion in a manner that acknowledges the reality of discrimination or harassment based on race or sex." So I just wanted to bring this to the committee to let you all know that we know this exists, and we will advise you of any next steps we need to take when the time comes. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions or comments? Dina, is this a moot point now with the new president?
So I don't think anything's moot until the new president is inaugurated. So that's kind of my take on everything. A lame duck session in the past has been consequential, you know, and so I don't want to overlook that point. But yes, Joe, it's my understanding that President-elect Joe Biden won't be enforcing this, and that all executive orders issued by a previous president will be rescinded. But it's still in effect now, and it's in effect until the new president's inaugurated.
Thank you for that. Any other questions or comments? Moving right along to new business. There was a lot of things brought up today throughout this entire meeting. Can we just like throw those into new business and work them out later? Unless there's any other comments about new business, I will be taking those right now. Seeing no new business. Did I hear somebody? Okay. Seeing no new business. Public comment?
No public comment.
Woohoo! Thank you. So, I mean, not that I don't love hearing from the public. I truly, truly do, because that's part of my job. But thank you. We are 6 minutes over, so I really, meeting's adjourned.